What do we do when things get hard? Today, Dr. Morgan and I share our top tips on what we have done personally as we navigate the challenging times along the motherhood journey. From infertility through pregnancy, birth, postpartum, and mothering our children, we are no strangers to difficult times. We each share our top three tips that we have found to be most effective for us, and we hope that through our raw and vulnerable shares, you are able to pull some wisdom or support for yourself, no matter what challenges you are navigating. Let's learn about what we do when things get hard. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Welcome back to season 5, you guys. We are so excited and just, you know, happy that we've continued this project. And it's been about 18 months now almost, which is really wild to think about. Of posting every week, except for, you know, some of the breaks in between seasons. And we love the feedback that we get about the podcast. Thank you for letting us know. Let us know more.
Tell us all the things.
Tell us all the
words of information.
And if it behooves you, you know, leave a review or a 5-star review or something like that, because it does really help our reach. And all of this internet BS is about algorithms and reach and networking, and, you know. And so, anyway, it does really help, and we appreciate it. We wanted to kick off this season, I think, just because this is where we're at right now, with an episode talking about when things get hard in your motherhood journey. So, I mean, like, even just now before we recorded, we're talking about, like, you know, both of our hair is kind of greasy. We didn't get a chance to shower. And I was asking, you know, Leah, have you puked yet today? As if it's so normal that it's like, what time is it going to happen today?
I know. Oh, gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
So, it's only 8:30. So, no, not yet. But
oh, my gosh. I'm going to really cross my fingers that it doesn't happen when you come over to my house later.
Oh, that would be terrible. Yeah.
In the pool. Please don't puke in the pool. Don't be that kid.
I wouldn't do that. Don't worry.
Okay. Anyways, so we just wanted to share with you sort of a blend of what's going on in our lives that is tricky, but mostly how we have found, you know, methods that help overcome or persevere through really hard times, because oftentimes there's not anything that you can do about the situation. And if there is, then do it. But I also feel like it's kind of par for the course of people in this natural health community to feel like I can always fix it. There's always something more that can be done, and more and more. And if I'm just not doing enough, or I'm not being strict enough, I'm not being, you know, careful enough, like, there's more I could avoid, there's more I could do. And it's like, okay, well, at some point we have to just let go of all of that too, and be like, this is a largely uncontrollable scenario, and it just is what it is, and it sucks, and it's, you know, crappy, and here's the ways that I'm going to sort of like survive it. And so would you say,
yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, part of what I'll talk about too is a part of one of my three pillars that I've tried to turn into 10 is
classic you.
Like, I know. I'm like, this one tip has 5 sub-tips. is just like finding peace in the chaos. And I think that is a life lesson that we really aren't taught as adults or children or any human being at any time. And it's just such a balance and a dance. And I think about this along the fertility journey of knowing what to do and what is helpful and pursuing that, also balanced with an acceptance of what is and finding peace in what is. And it is really tricky, because if people adopt this like all or nothing mentality, you can't win, right? You can't win in an all or nothing mentality in the fertility journey and motherhood, because there is this in between that you have to exist in. And we just aren't taught, I would say, and we're not practiced at finding this healthy balance in between, you know, especially in modern culture where everything is it must be one thing. You have to adopt yes. to one doctrine or the other. You know, you either breastfeed or your formula, you're either co-sleep or you're not. You either are IVF or, you know, anti-IVF. And it's like sometimes there's just these in-betweens, and the same thing goes when things get hard, I think.
I fully agree. It's like, I think maybe it just must be the human mind tendency to want to have a black or white view on anything and everything. We obviously see that happening in society, and there's pitting us against each other, and you're in this camp, you're in that camp, like you were just saying. And really, like, it's easy to fall into that because it's almost like a club. Like, you want to fit mm-hmm. in to some kind of a club. And, you know, we see this in school, like with junior high and high schoolers, like they want to fit into a clique, and you feel welcome and you feel understood, and like you're with people who are like you. And it reminds me of Avatar. Mm-hmm. You guys have ever seen that original Avatar? It came out in like 2006 or 7 or something. And at the very end, when they're trying to like call all of the Avatar people, whatever their species is called, and to fight against the humans, they like fly their dragon things to like the ocean, and they gather the ocean Avatar people who have like adapted to that. And then there's like the ones that are in the trees, and there's ones that are underground or whatever. I don't know. I forget all the examples, mm-hmm. but my point is that they've sort of had these adaptive niches, you know, or like Darwin's finches, like they all had these like adaptive kind of things. And then they're almost like these subspecies. I think there's something very deeply innate in us as humans for survival to want to pick like a tribe, like a track, and you're like, go mm-hmm. hardcore, all out or nothing. Like, I'm going to defend this ideal to the death. mm-hmm. And because it makes us feel safe, because we're like, oh, we're with other people. We've chosen other people who are like-minded in that. That's not wrong. I don't think it's wrong to think that. And obviously you're only going to really like gravitate towards and have friends that do have your same ideals about the way that you live your life or you mother your children or whatever it is. But we have to be realistic, intersect this with reality, which is that in no situation is anyone living 100% in these extremes. And if they are, it's probably really miserable. And they're probably suffering a lot because they're sacrificing a lot to be so strict and so polarized. And so the way that this intersects with when things get hard is like, it's never going to all be like 100% perfect all the time. And mm-hmm. obviously we want that. Like, I understand why we want that, but it's just not realistic. It's like, well, yeah, I would like for me to also have wings.
Like, I think that would be cool. Me as well. And pointy ears and canines. No,
and magic.
Hey, if anyone reads those books,
hashtag
if you
Akatar.
Don't, you have no idea what I'm talking about.
Oh my gosh. If you guys haven't seen or heard about these books, there's the Sarah J. Maas, that's the author. She's written these multiple series and they involve fairies, and that sounds so lame, and it's not lame, and you should really check it out. It's worth
when things get hard, read Sarah J. Maas.
Yeah. No, honestly, okay, so I'm just gonna jump into my tips. Mm-hmm. So my top tip that I really learned this time with my postpartum was Sunday. So for me, it's postpartum is when it's really hard. And last night, mm-hmm. in the middle of the night, I couldn't fall back asleep. I went upstairs. I gave my husband, we're still not sleeping in the same bed. I know that like really pisses a lot of people off, but like, I don't care. You do what you're going to do. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And like right now, this is how we're both getting the best sleep. Mm-hmm. But I had already fed her 3 or 4 times a night. It wasn't even 3 o'clock in the morning. So I walked upstairs and I gave him the monitor to be like, I'm tapping out. Like, you handle this chick, because she's teething and she's going through this really hard leap and whatever. But when I came back down, well, and I like tripped over a bunch of stuff up in that room up there because there's a bunch of stuff all over the floor that he needs to clean up that like, I don't even know what it is. It's for his work. And I was like so annoyed, angry in the moment. And I was like, can you clean this stuff up in the morning? And then I like leaned on the bed to give him the monitor, and Gage, our oldest, was in the bed with him. And I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, and then I almost tripped on Doug because I couldn't see anything. So like, Doug and Gage are up in that room with all this stuff. And I'm handing him the monitor. I'm just like, whatever, like, you deal with it. I've been dealing, you know, he was out of town last week and we had multiple bad nights when he was out of town too. So I was like, I really need to catch up. Like, I'm dying on the vine here. So anyway, I came back downstairs and I was trying to go back to sleep, and I was having a really hard time falling back asleep because I got pissed. I got annoyed at my interaction that happened upstairs. And I was thinking about somehow, like, you know, when you're kind of sleepy and your brain does all these like weird connections and stuff, I was remembering some of these really hard moments with Sunday in the middle of the night where I like freaked out, like really freaked out, like screaming into a pillow kind of a thing, because I was not sleeping. And it had been like so many days and weeks, really. And she was just, it was just really tough in the beginning. And it's always tough for me in the beginning to some extent, but this was unique because of her breathing issue with her laryngeal malacia. But anyway, I was just kind of thinking about this podcast and how we were going to record today. And I felt so sad for myself in that version of me, because I was so distraught, you know. But around that same time, and this is my point, so just bear with me, I'm circling back around.
I believe you.
No, I cannot be concise. It's not my top. It would be at the bottom of my skills list on my resume. Concise. I just can't do it. Anyway, because to me, all of these details like are important. Like you need to know what.
Because you're the feminine and that's important. Details are important.
Is that a feminine thing?
Oh, yeah. The masculine is like, hi, I think you should go to a counselor. Bye. That's Mike if he was on a podcast. And the feminine just talks and talks and talks and talks and talks, and there's details and it swirls around and it never ends. The feminine never wants it to end.
Okay, well, maybe I'm way more feminine than I thought.
Which is why a feminine female and a masculine male often do have conflict when trying to solve problems or tell stories or, you know, like all if Mike asks me or I'll just tell him about my conversation on the phone and it's like details and all this stuff. And I'll ask him, you know, oh, you talked to your mom. What did you talk about?
Yeah.
And he'll be like, oh, she's like, she's good. You know, like it's just, they don't have, it's not the details. That's not.
Oh my gosh. This is literally Wes and I, like, I do feel like he's a pretty masculine man and he does not want to hear.
No, they don't.
Mostly my dreams. he does not want to hear my dreams. You know me. I like to talk. I have to process them. I'm just going to call you every morning.
That's why we love Sarah J. Maas, because there's so much to read. And Mike would be like, wait, what's the point? Tell me about the war. Who won?
Yeah. What's the just the, like four sentence synopsis of it? So anyway, long story short, around this time where I was having this like really hard time in the middle of the night. And this is my point. My point here, I'll just say it real quick, is to find more joy in your life and like really pack in moments of joy. Because I think it overall raises, at least for me, it raised my threshold. So it raised the bar for the amount of BS that I could handle in the day.
Yeah.
Because I'd had these little moments to fill up my bucket. And I know it sounds like, duh, like that's such a cliche concept. Like you got to fill your bucket. You can't pour from an empty cup, blah, 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 blah. But to me, honestly, I never had really like embodied what that meant for me in my life, because it's going to be different for everybody.
Right.
Because for me, like going and getting a massage feels nice, but like I don't feel more like resilient after that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel relaxed and stuff for like a couple of hours and then it's totally back to normal.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. There's all these other kind of like self-care practices, but they just for some reason didn't really hit home for me. And then I really learned about myself. This is one of the coolest things to me about motherhood too is in parenting is like it's just this constant evolution of self-development and self-realization and about who you are and what are your areas where you need to work on and whatever. I learned with her with after Sunday and when we were really struggling that the way that I was going to get through the day the best and be in the best mental state was to have a few things happen in that day that were like fun for me. So actually part of them was reading those books.
Mm-hmm.
So I was reading Fourth Wing and Iron Flame at that time. And then I started to move into the A Court of Thorns and Roses series. And it was so fun and so like, it just gave me so much pleasure because I was reading for fun.
Yeah.
I hadn't read for fun in like 15 years.
I know. And it's so different. It's so different than reading a self-help book.
Yes. And everything I was reading was always like, you know, nonfiction about like babies or kids or trauma or I don't know, big topics that are like lame overall to read about constantly. Yeah. They're fascinating to that side of my brain, but I really needed my brain to just like, be boosted for like no other reason than just enjoyment. And I think a lot of people do maybe feel that too when they watch shows. I just, my husband and I don't even have a TV. We've never been like show watchers really.
Yeah.
But now I totally can relate to that feeling in the way that it was brought out with reading those books. So I would like prioritize, literally I would tell Wes, I'd be like, at some point today, I'm going to go in the room and I'm going to lock the door and I'm going to read for like an hour.
Yeah.
And he was really on board with understanding. You know, we know each other so well. We've been together for a long time, although not as long as you and Mike. How long have you and Mike been together, by the way?
Oh my gosh, since 2008. So it would have been almost 10 years in 2018, 16, 19, 20, 21, 22, 16, 23, 24.
No, 14 years. Wait.
16 years.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, we've been together for 10 years, but still, it's a long time.
That's still a long time. I mean, yeah, I know some people who haven't even been married that long.
Yeah, right. Like, you learn your partner, and he knows. And he knows me, and he knows, like, what it is that I need in order to kind of, like, reach my head above water again. Because when I feel like I'm drowning, it feels really bad, you know, as it does to everybody. But so and it doesn't take that much for me to feel like my head's above the water again. But I do, if I don't do it though, then I just like sink further and further and further. And so anyway, reading those books to me was one of the things, and finding the joy. This is what I'm talking about, is finding the joy. But the other example I wanted to bring up before you pop in with one of your topics is, this is probably going to go down in my memory as like a really pivotal moment for me as a human, as a woman. Mm-hmm. And when it was happening, I was aware of it too. It's like so fun when you can be really aware of those kind of like core memories almost. But it wasn't even just a core memory. It felt like I was on a board game and I was like chugging along on a path, like the game of life. And then you can keep going like down the route that you're going, or you can like pivot, like, you know, you win the lottery or something. And so then your life totally changes.
You get another baby in your little car.
Yes, exactly. And it was like, I branched off into this, in my opinion, like more positive space and like delineation for my life. And this is what happened, is it was after dinner. We were all hanging out in the living room. Sunny was probably like 10 weeks or something, 9 or 10 weeks. And I mean, the hump of the difficulty was about to get better anyway, but this, I think, really honed in for me and like cemented the idea that when I can have fun, I can handle how hard it all is too. Like mm-hmm. when things get hard, like that's this topic episode, you know, or episode topic, I can handle so much more than I would have thought. But if I don't have any fun, I just can't. I just can't. Yeah. And you crumble. So we were in the living room. We had just eaten dinner and we were playing some music. And then somehow Celine Dion got brought up. I don't know. Celine Dion. Maybe whenever anybody says the idea of like, it's all coming back to me,
it's all coming back. It's all coming back to me now. God, so, I love Celine Dion.
Oh, I know. Me too. I love. Mm-hmm. My mom and I used to just like belt it. And so mm-hmm. it had been years and years and years since I'd heard Celine Dion. And Wes like hates her. So he was not down for this, but I didn't care. And so I turned it on to our like sound bar in our living room so loud, because Gage also had never heard it. And the girls were dancing in their little dresses and stuff. And I sang like, I don't know, two or three, like the main top Celine Dion songs at the absolute top of my lungs. Yes. And it was so much fun. And like everyone was dancing and like the kids were just, they thought it was so funny, like how into the music I was. And it was so therapeutic. I mean, there is literally physiological reasons why singing makes you feel better, because it mm-hmm. activates your vagus nerve. And it's also sort of like this, I mean, dancing and movement is medicine, and dancing is medicine, and like literally shaking and moving out energy from your body and around you and raising up your vibration. Like all of these things are true for sure. But I remember in that moment just being like, oh my God, this is like what I need more of. This is, I need this. Like I need to create these little moments. And it was probably like 15 minutes total, but it carried me for like a while, you know, days and days and days of difficulty, then back down to where like I could handle it, you know? So anyway, I feel like it's going to be really independent and different for everyone. It's not always going to be a massage or a facial or even getting away from your children. Some people don't really like care or want that, or it's so much more stressful for them to get away from their children that they're not actually getting filled up. And you have to figure it out for you. And it sort of surprised me. I don't know why, but it sort of surprised me that like some of these little things like singing, reading a book, would give me such a boost. And so mm-hmm. you have to experiment, because you don't know which one's going to be the one for you until you know. Like maybe it is going out and meeting a friend alone in a coffee shop or something, or going on a walk. That was another one for me, like going on walks with Doug and the baby in the carrier and just like watching him be so happy outside, and maybe catching up on a Marco Polo and being out and like having, you know, a set 30 minutes where if I didn't want anyone to talk to me, they didn't, because the baby couldn't talk. Yeah. You know? And so I just really want to encourage people to learn that about themselves. And use it and lean on it. And it may surprise you. And it's like there's no judgment either way. And you can't force yourself to feel uplifted by things that aren't going to uplift you.
Yeah.
Like, so don't waste your time on those things or your money.
Yeah.
Like spend the time, like being very, very focused, because the more children you have, you don't have time to mess around and just play. You need to be like, okay, I've got an hour. What am I going to do? Like, what is my most effective strategy of shaking off this like difficulty or my bad mood or whatever it is, and then do that thing. So anyway, thank you for listening to my very, very long diatribe.
Wow, I love that. That's so great. And I mean, that is what you have experienced. And I think that this is important for us to note. And I see this in so many different ways, is that we are told as people about things like reduce your stress, fill up your cup, do self-care. And I feel like it just goes in one ear and out the other. And people are like, yeah, I know. But no one actually does it because they don't even get it. They don't really know what that means to embody it. And once you have that experience of that embodied practice, it all clicks. But I think for the majority of people, it hasn't clicked yet. And I bet if you polled everybody who listens to this podcast and even everybody else, they would be able to tell you that self-care and filling up your cup is important. But I bet most people don't actually – have never actually felt that or don't know what that's like. And a lot of it, I think, is because we haven't – like society doesn't really give us permission to do that. I mean, even, you know, the guilt that can come up, like the mom guilt of like, oh, I'm taking an hour to read a book. You know, my husband has been working all day, but he's going to watch the kids so I can read a book. It's like some people just can't pass the guilt, yet it's so important. And I think in other cultures is more a part of their life and probably why they're so happy, you know, in certain cultures, because in the American society or how I was raised, especially, it was always seen as like a waste of time to have like play. It's like you need to be – if you have a free moment, you need to be like weeding the garden, which is actually really fun for me, but it's still like a work, you know, in a certain way. And like I just think having pure pleasure for the sake of pleasure, which is why I think reading nonfiction, right? Fiction. No, fiction. Like fiction, fake. Yeah. Fake. I always get those confused.
I know. It's me fake. Too. Why is that? I could never
do it. I
don't
know, because nonfiction seems like that shouldn't be real. I don't know. It's like very weird. But – I think that that is why it's so therapeutic, because it is this act that is – there is no outcome. There is no goal. You're not trying to like better yourself or get a degree or learn more. It's like you're literally just experiencing it for pleasure, and we need more of that in our lives.
100%. I love that. Yes. It's like the lack of it being a goal for the better is a huge piece of this, I think. Yeah,
because I think that that fills up a different cup, or it drains your cup. It's like – if I get a book to read about fertility, like, yes, that's like work to me. It actually drains my cup in a way. It fills up a different cup, but not the like full cup. There has to be no purpose to it. And I think that's the whole point and why kids are such an amazing exemplary example of that. They do so much for just the sake of it, of just pure joy and pleasure.
Yep.
Until we drill into them, like, no, we need to be like getting work done and like homework, and like there's no free time for that. And that's so sad, and it shouldn't be like that. And then we just adopt that as adults, and that's why we're all burned out and stressed and so upset.
I know, it really is so true. I think that learning from kids is it's something that I haven't actually done all that much in, which is surprising because having four kids, but play is really hard for me. Like I do not like to play with my kids. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to sit on the floor and get into this like little make-believe world because maybe because it feels purposeless to me. Like maybe that's why.
But you and I both, I mean, that's why we became doctors. We have that in us that we're like, we have to just keep going and being achievers and being better. And I just think it's been drilled into us since we were kids. It's like the generation that we grew up in and our culture and stuff. So I think that's amazing that you shared that. And my tip is going to – you talked a lot about the embodiment and like doing things for pleasure and joy, like singing, moving your body. My tip is more in the intellectual space because if you haven't guessed, we're I'm like intellectual as you are too. And for me, when things get hard, I really have to find ways to process what I'm going through. And that processing has lots of layers to it. This is my 5 sub-tips under one tip.
Lay it on thick.
Part of that processing is expressing how I feel, which you know is hard for me to do. And I would say it's in the moments of when things are really hard, like along our infertility journey, or at times I haven't had as much struggle in motherhood because I'm so new to motherhood. And Avia, for the most part, has been an easier baby. There's been definitely episodes of leaps and teething and sleep stuff. But I don't think it's to the degree that you've ever had. My postpartum was like very blissful, but my infertility journey, my pregnancies have been very hard. And in those moments, I need to like express how I'm feeling. So I always feel better after I cry and tell people. I have to externally process. Not everybody's an external processor, right? And I actually teach about this in my Reduce Your Stress course, my mini course, about the different ways that we process as people. Some people need to go for a walk. Like that might be why it feels so good for you, because you're physically moving your body, you're in nature. There has to be an element for me where I say it out loud. I can't even cry unless I'm saying something out loud. I can't like go in my room by myself and cry. I just can't. I go there and there's no tears. Like nothing
that
happens.
So wild. Like you'll be thinking the thoughts in your mind and you're sad. Like you're upset about it. But until
can't
it
cry.
What?
And the minute I start talking, then it like pours out. I have to have someone receiving it on the other end. And that's something I've learned about myself, which is really unfortunate in a way, because it's challenging because you always have to have an ear, right? Of someone who can listen to you, and that's not always possible. And so, I can't cry with all therapists. There's many therapists that I've seen where I just hold it together. And I think it's so much of my training through medical school, where there are certain people and certain energies where I just hold it together. And I can't, even if someone's like, I'll pay you $1 million to cry right now in front of them, I like couldn't.
Oh my gosh.
I felt like that with Abby. We both saw Abby. I could never cry in front of her because I always felt judged in a way.
Oh my God, I would like scream cry in front of Abby.
Yeah, I know. And it's like the difference.
Abby. I would be like, Abby, I don't understand what you're talking about. Why are you making this sound so easy? It's not easy. It's hard.
I could never cry in front of her. And so it is really special for me if I can find a therapist or a healer who I can cry in front of, because that's hard for me. But that's part of it, right? So releasing how I feel, telling people how I feel, and then crying is part of it. The other part for me is I really have to find meaning in my struggle. And not everybody needs that, but I need that.
Mm-hmm.
And along our infertility journey in particular, it was really hard for me, and this gets onto more of like a spiritual level, for me to be like, oh, this is just a random occurrence, an event that has no meaning and there's no bigger purpose. It just sucks, which I know sometimes there are cases like that. It is random and maybe there is no purpose. But
although, wait a minute. But even though it can seem that way, I think we'd all agree that people will learn lessons from it, right? And like maybe that's not the purpose. But yeah, like there is still, even if it's like, man, this just is like the worst thing in the world. And you know, you can think of like the most tragic things in the whole world, and it does feel like there would be no meaning or purpose. But there is like at least something that is, it's like walking along that life path, you know, and then it pivoting. And there will be, it's the butterfly effect. It's like the rest of your life is different now, you know, from this thing. Anyway,
So that's always been how I am. And for myself and for others, I've always found purpose in that. And that's a triggering statement in the infertility space, which is like, this is all happening for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really triggering thing to tell anybody going through infertility. And I get that. But for me, along my infertility journey, I didn't want other people to tell me that, but I needed to figure that out for myself of this is all happening for a reason. There is some reason or meaning to this, even if it's not true. My psyche needs that. My soul needs that. And so that's what has led me personally to seek out a lot of spiritual healers, guides, intuitives, people who I personally believe I can connect with beings in other realms, right? So like my baby souls before they're born, people who have passed, my grandmother, other people who are on the other side. I believe in that we can commune with them, that all of us can to some degree, but some people are just more gifted in that, you know, communication channel.
Or some people are like me and they don't want anything to do.
Yeah.
Some people, the crap out of me.
Some people are scared. But no, I've always felt that. You know, I feel my grandmother around me a lot. I feel like she sends me messages and signals. And I personally believe that they can manipulate to some degree our world and give us signs and feelings and clues. And I've always turned to that. And maybe that you could call that my faith. You know, I don't necessarily go to the Catholic priest and, you know, say my confessions as I was raised to do. I never felt connected to anything higher than myself to go tell people that I was being naughty and bad in some church with some man I didn't trust. I never got the confession thing. But for people who are Catholic and love that, that's great. But everyone finds what connects them to something greater than themselves or a bigger purpose. And for me, that has been that of, you know, connecting to my baby souls before they were here to be like, this is all part of the journey. You know, you needed to go through something hard to become the person that we needed you to be. You know, we needed you to be a certain type of mother for us. Or, you know, you needed to learn this lesson so you could help other people. Whatever it is, I found so much peace in that. And when it got really hard along our infertility journey, it was honestly that that brought me the most peace.
I think that it really is like a guiding light, and it makes sense. And it's like, yeah, I like how you mentioned though that even if it's not true, that you still need it. And I think that is, there's like so much more to be said about that, because sometimes we, it's almost like fake it till you make it. Like sometimes we just need to do what we need to do, even if we maybe know that. Well, because how would else would we don't know. How would we?
Well, that's faith, we right? That's faith. Yeah.
Exactly.
Faith is like, we don't know. Like, this could all be fake, but I believe it's real.
Yes, exactly. And then you've also had, you know, supportive experiences that point to the fact that that probably is the way that it is. And so that's helpful as well. I think finding the meaning is another one of those human things that we all cultures across the world have had some sort of like a religious or an origin story or whatever it is. And it's because it's just, it would be like, I don't know how it would feel if there was no concept of that. It would maybe just be very like, you die and there's nothing else. And
yeah, but to me, I'm just like, there, that's the saddest thing in the whole world, that everything is just random occurrences. There's no point to life. We're just, I remember I read this like atheist book once when I was in college, and it was the most depressing thing I've ever read. It was How to Teach Your Children About Death from an Atheist Perspective.
Oh.
And it was just like, we're just carbon and we just die and go into the earth and that's it. There's like nothing else. And I was like, this is so depressing. Like I, you know, just like it said, like whether, you know, all of the things that I believe in are real or not, I would rather live in that fairy tale.
Right. You know? Well, and like for you, that's going to be the thing. And there are probably people who they feel like great peace in that, in the more atheist the things, whatever, and that's fine too. It reminds me of the scene of Mufasa and Simba, and he's like, you'll die and you'll become the grass, and the grass becomes a zebra. And,
which is true, like that to, you know, our physical.
It is, but to me, that's purpose. Like there is purpose in that too. Like it's all of a cycle. I'm with you though. I do think that our spirits move on to something different, and I don't know what that is. I'm very open to the ideas, but anyways, I love that. I think that we need to find something that's going to keep us motivated and keep us going, and you know, whether the evidence that points that that's probably true is like cherry picked by us, who cares?
Yeah.
I don't think it matters. I think that it needs to, you know, if that's something that helps you, then that's something that helps you.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I'll share another one. I find great help and support and not joy, what is the word? I find it to be just so grounding, I think, to normalize or to find normalization of hard experiences through other people's stories. So again, I mean, I feel like everything that we're saying really is like rooted in ancient human history of what it means to be a human animal and the species, and like what were really common components of civilization back way, way, way long ago. And sharing stories of and normalization of like what people's experiences are, were part of that too. And it is nowadays in a different way. And social media can be a double-edged sword, because sometimes it can be only the fairy tale pieces of people's lives, or it can be actually really nice for sharing that things are hard. And I love that. I think that it's so helpful for me to hear the stories of other women having mastitis, having postpartum depression and anxiety, wanting more children, but not thinking that they can handle it because of like how hard it is in other ways or whatever it is. Those types of stories to me are like life-giving. I need to know that I'm not the only one. It dissipates my angst. It dissipates it to be like, oh God, okay, thank God. And it's not even like I really feel that alone. I don't consciously in my mind think, oh my, I'm so alone in this. I'm the only one in the world that you know, is having this experience. I know some people do feel a lot of loneliness in their hard times. I don't at least have that. I can understand that, but I don't have those thoughts where I'm like really feeling alone. I'm just feeling like this is so hard and so crazy. And often I'll be like, why does nobody talk about this? Or are like, what tell me, like, I literally want to hear, and I know that other people don't want to hear this sometimes. I mm-hmm. want to hear other people's hard times. Yeah. I want it. It makes me feel less, maybe it's like because I'm putting a lot of shame on myself in my, mm-hmm. for my hard times. I don't really know. I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah. No, I can resonate with that, with feeling sick during pregnancy of like, did I do something wrong? Am I not really healthy? Is, you know.
Yes.
Am I the only one experiencing this? Is everyone else having these blissful pregnancies? Yet when you hear, especially people who I know are healthy, who are people who I look up to having similar experiences, it's like, oh, okay. Maybe there's nothing wrong with me in that way.
Yes.
So I get that. It does – you kind of think something – yeah, you kind of reflect on yourself. And when other people are going through it, it's like, oh, okay. It's not
yeah,
just me.
It just kind of carries the – like they carry the weight of the situation on their shoulders too, and it lightens the load for you.
Yeah.
So I really – and I know that a lot of people won't want to hear like more negative stories, or they just don't really feel comfortable and vulnerable in sharing their mm-hmm. own story. I get that. I'm also an external processor. Like you, although I cry very easily.
That's great.
I cry like multiple times a week. And it's not because sometimes I cry like just for a hot second. Like it just, but mm-hmm. I don't know. It's actually something about myself that I wish I had more control over.
No, it's so much better what you have. Mine is like a rigid. It's
not hard
healthy.
To in front of my kids, because like when I'm having my own emotions in front of my kids and I'm like, I don't want them to like, I wish I could just disappear. Or you know what I wish? And one of our friends from college, Katie, said this the other day. She was over and the kids were asking her if she could have a superpower, what would she choose? And she said it was so funny. She said she would choose the stop time so that she could go take a nap for 8 hours. and then zoom back into the moment and no one would know that she just slept for 8 hours.
Oh my gosh.
But when she said that, I thought to myself, I wish I could stop time so that I could stop and freeze the moment and just like deal with my emotions, whatever mm-hmm. they are, like – big emotions. I feel like I have big emotions a lot, like mm-hmm. big sadness or big frustration or whatever. But at the same, on the same side of that, I have big like happiness and joy too.
Yeah.
But when I'm trying to protect my kids from my emotions that are like not really their fault, it's mine. And I don't want to like put it on them, or I don't want to like even have them like see me upset about something, because I don't want them to like internalize that or take it on or whatever. I do sometimes wish I could do that. So anyway, yeah, I mean, there's definitely pros and cons to all of it. It is interesting though, because you and I are so similar in so many ways. And that is one thing that you've always needed to like be able to talk in order to have your emotions. But anyway, mm-hmm. I just wanted to share that idea of seeking out normalization so that you know that you're not the only one. And also that you can kind of just like take a deep breath. To me, it just like gives me some space to take a deep breath and be like, okay, like I'm not the only one. This is okay. And I still am a good mom and I still love my kids so much. And it's so helpful to hear that like other good moms, or like in my perception, good moms are having these struggles and they feel the same way. And it's also funny because it's like the way that you're going to connect to mom friends in the future, because there are definitely people that I've met who don't seem to have this. And I like can't connect with them on a deeper level, maybe on a surface level, but we'll never be like deep, deep friends.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you don't get me. Mm-hmm. Like you inherently can't, if you don't ever find your kids frustrating or you're going to at least act or perceive, or you make, you know, like, what am I trying to say? Like paint a picture that everything is like hunky dory and perfect in your life. Like I just, will always be like tip of the iceberg friends, and that's cool mm-hmm. and that's whatever. And like, there's a time and a place for tip of the iceberg friends, but I need to like know your struggles. I need to know mm-hmm. that you also sometimes want to just like scream and run away, and mm-hmm. that you know, you don't, because you love them so much and you're completely obsessed and enthralled. And it's like so frustrating. Like there, to me, it's like, it is hard to hold. Maybe it's because I'm a Libra. It's a little bit easier for me because I can hold these two really hard extremes at the same time of loving all of it so much and it being like, wow, this is so challenging. And I almost feel like I put myself in this situation, right? Like how much I'm trying to work while having like four little kids and then I'm homeschooling them. Like it is hard. I'm choosing the harder path, the hardest path yeah. that you can choose, I feel like. Yes. You know, and like just being so cognizant of what they eat and like all the things and blah, 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 blah. But I do think it's worth it. And I love it. And I'm so happy that I do it, but I'm just not going to try to like shove it all down and pretend that it's easy. So that yeah. is my tip too, is if it feels good to you, if it's something that helps you, to seek out people that can help normalize your experience to help carry the weight with you.
Yeah. No, I think that's incredibly helpful. And it does, I think when things get hard, like we've mentioned, a lot of the things that we're talking about go back to the beginning of time, because I think that there are certain ways that we as humans have dealt with hard times since the beginning of time, and we're just highlighting them, right? It's like filling community. Up our cup, community, mm-hmm. finding joy, connecting
finding
with others.
Purpose, meaning.
Yeah, having a spiritual reason or meaning behind something. I mean, I think that this – it's not like I even thought about these tips very long. It's like this is just like what came to me really quickly. And I bet if people sat down and were asked the same thing, they'd come to similar conclusions, because it's like – we all are humans and we kind of like have these similar things. So my next tip is when things get hard, at least for me in my experience, connecting with my partner mm-hmm. is a really important part. And my partner happens to just be very funny. And
yes, he is
he uses humor in his life, whether that's his coping mechanism or strategy, or it's just who he is.
Both.
Humor, yeah, both. Humor is just a big part of his life. And I know not everybody has a partner who that is a thing, or them or not. But one thing that I have loved about Mike through all the struggle we've been through, even when a lot of that struggle was stemming from issues with like his body or whatever, like throughout our infertility journey, I've fallen more and more in love with him because of how he's handled hard situations.
Mm.
And for example, I don't know, like when something bad happens, and it doesn't mean that people who don't react this way aren't good or not, they're not. But for me, when something bad happens, when it's so insane, when it's gotten so crazy, when we've had through so much struggle, you know, he just kind of, we laugh about it in a way. I mean, it's not funny. Like I look back on our infertility journey and I'm like, I don't feel like we laughed a lot about that. But at the same time, it's almost like humorous. Like when we would get a test back where his sperm was like zero again or worse, like he would go through surgery and like then the outcome was even worse than before. There is so much sadness and grief and crying that happens. But then it's also, there's this underlying thread of like, this is so bad, it's almost funny.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. Yeah.
And, you know, he doesn't get really upset or pissed off like when Avi does something, or, you know, if something happens, let's say she falls and like hits her head, like we don't yell at each other. We don't, there's just not this, I don't know. We're always like together on the same team, mm-hmm. which again, not everybody has that experience. But if there's a way for you to foster that, we had a challenging first part of our relationship. So I'm not saying like, oh, we've gotten together and it's all been perfect and hunky-dory. It hasn't. We've had to learn really intense communication skills, really.
I can vouch for that. I was there for that. Yes. I was there for all of that.
Like we've just been through really hard stuff. And a lot of our hard stuff hasn't always been around fertility and motherhood and parenthood. It was around other stuff too, like painful intercourse and other things that were really challenging to like the core of our relationship. And we've just risen above that. And we've gotten to this point where we are on each other's team. We don't pin against each other. And I think that has been so helpful, because when you're going through something hard and you also feel like you're battling your partner, that can make it just that much harder. Whereas if something's so hard, but you have this rock beside you,
mm-hmm.
it makes me want to cry.
And
it's like you're walking through this like really hard journey. And I feel like when I think back on our life together, it's like, it's like we're walking through Armageddon and there's like explosions and fire and all of these like things that keep happening and scary stuff and all of this stuff, but like we're holding hands.
Aww.
And like we're walking through it together. And it's like, it doesn't matter what is thrown at us. We've like been through so much that as long as like we're still together and we are like a team, it just makes the other external stuff and all the hard stuff not feel as big. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, because you're not alone, and you've prioritized your bottom of the pyramid, like the base of your whole life and relationship and structure. I love that. I think that's amazing. And I also just want to speak to, I feel like there's this thing in culture right now where it's like, I think it's phasing out a little bit, but about this like deadbeat dad kind of thing, where like, you know, you get together with your girlfriends and you just like bitch about your partner all the time. And not to say that it's not okay to feel frustrated with your partner, because I think it is. And especially mm-hmm. like as women, we gather and we talk about that. And I think that's normal to an extent. I just think it's not normal when it's every single time, or it's, mm-hmm. you know, like so intense, or maybe when there's a lot of expression of angst and anger, but there's not like an attempt to remedy it on the flip side. And mm-hmm. especially when you're bringing children into the world, if you have a partner when you're doing that and you want to continue to stay together for the sake of the family unit or your own relationship with them or whatever it is, like it takes that. You have to prioritize it. And yeah. it's very, very important. And one of the things that I agree with you on all of these standpoints, and I feel like our husbands are similar in that we're the kind of like flighty, like anxious ones. Yeah. And they are the like the rock, you know. Mm-hmm. As part of my wedding vows to Wes, I was like, I feel like our relationship is that you're the big African elephant, like just slowly trudging through the savannah, and I'm like one of those little black birds that like yes. flies all around and like lands on your ear, like
the worms on them.
And like flits around and like catches a ride and like goes off and like does thing and then gets back on you, and you're just like this like steady horse. Like he's very, you know, he's a rock. And we need to also recognize that like they do need their own support too, and they can't just yeah. continue to endure everything for always, and like yeah. we're supportive of them too. But one thing that is so helpful is, and sometimes it just takes reminding too, is to the team aspect that you mentioned. It's you and your partner and your kids against mm-hmm. a situation, not yeah. you against your partner, or you and your partner against the kids, or you mm-hmm. against the kids, or whatever. It's like we need to try to reframe things so that it's like we are a team together against this issue of infertility. Mm-hmm. We are a team together against this issue of like cleaning the house or splitting the duties. And it's mm-hmm. a hard thing to split the duties. And like there's generational stuff, and you might have been raised in a certain way and you think that like I should do it because I'm the woman, or like whatever, da da da, whatever.
Yeah.
And then when in parenting too, it's like, okay, if bedtime battles or whatever, like it's us all as a team, hopefully like working together against this. And I don't do this 100% of the time. I probably only do it like 50% of the time, but it's something I'm working on, is to continue to remind myself that these people in our immediate life, our family unit that we've created together, and this life that we've created, are not against us. They are not trying to like make our life worse. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to like hurt our feelings. We're just having like an issue with something that happens, and we need to partner up together and then tackle the issue and try to keep it separated in that sort of a way. And I think it really, really helps.
Yeah. And that brings me back to my first tip, which is processing. And it's almost impossible to get to the place that I'm talking about, like with my husband and I. I'm not saying that we've like arrived at any sort of like thing, and we're far from perfect, but it's, in my opinion, it is almost impossible for two people, I think, to navigate difficult times, stay together, have this great relationship, if you're not both doing work. And yeah. when I say work, I mean processing your stuff, releasing trauma, digging down into your patterns, you know, the stuff that you have with your parents. We all have them. Like, because I remember there was a time, I remember it so distinctly, you know, it's one of those core memories where it was a really hard time for Mike and I. And I looked at him and I said, you either do some processing and work, or this is it. And yeah. the difference is that he stepped up to the plate and did. Yet Mike is the kind of person who, you know, he's not going to fight me on certain things. I mean, he had his own stuff. Everyone has their own baggage, their own trauma. And the willingness is all it is. The willingness to step into that space and to do that work is why we can get to this place where we can laugh about these things, and we can, you know, raise our child with very little drama, really. If we hadn't been through, you know, we've been together, what, 16 years? If we hadn't been through the first 14 of them through so much hard stuff, us both dealing with our own stuff, I don't think our parenting experience would be the way it is. And I think that we did have this higher purpose reason for these type of parents that our children needed us to be, because if we had gotten pregnant, you know, when I was 18 and he was 22 and we had all of our baggage and all the stuff, it would have been a very different experience. Not to say that if that is you, that you can't, you can always start, but we all have trauma. We all have stuff that we need to work through. And I think it makes dealing with hard times easier when we are doing work for ourselves. So I just want to highlight that it hasn't just been me. It's been him too. And that is the difference when couples start to grow apart, when hard times break people up, you know, when deaths in the family like cause divorce, it's when, you know, they're not both dealing with their stuff. And it's just something that I think we should be doing all the time as people.
Yeah. And I mean, therapy, big fan of therapy, big fan of couples therapy if you need to do it, whatever it is, but it, there's no shame. Therapy, I think back in the day had the stigma that like only psychotic people or something did therapy, and it's just like not true. It's well, crazy.
I was just going to say for me, therapy, traditional talk therapy hasn't actually been what's helped me. Mine has been more like getting into subconscious trauma release.
And how do you do that?
So many things. I mean, practitioners have to help you, but things like EMDR or tap therapy, emotion code, emotional release therapy, because for me, a lot of my stuff and Mike's too is it's not on your conscious mind. If we knew it, we would deal with it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's deeper. It's stuff that you don't know is present. It's stuff that's driving your behaviors, your patterns, your reactions that you are not even aware of. So working with a practitioner who works more on the subconscious, who works on trauma release and getting deeper, that has been what's really helped me. I've been to lots of therapists and things, but that hasn't been what has helped me. Or Mike, he doesn't like go to someone and talk about it. He does really well with like spiritual experiences. Him personally, like existential spiritual experiences. We'll just leave it at that. and other things. But it just sometimes you need a different avenue. So if someone's listening to this and they're like, I've been to therapy, I've like done those things. Yes. It doesn't help.
Doesn't help, right?
I think that there's something deeper, especially for both partners.
I want to try EMDR. I think that sounds – I've never really done tapping or EMDR. I am one of those people that finds a lot of help with the talk therapy. If, and this is like with Abby, if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, there's this like very old, amazing woman in San Diego named Abby who is like a therapist, and she was an ex-midwife. She's amazing and rad, and she completely changed my life, like completely changed my life. But that's because she is not actually like a traditionally trained therapist. She's basically just this like very sage, smart woman. And then she had all this midwifery and parenting experience. So she was the perfect person for me. And she's like a life coach. So she would be really hard on me. She would call out my patterns and she wasn't nice.
Yeah, which I did not do well with. I don't do well with that. I shut down around people like that.
That's probably why you didn't.
Yeah, and we'll put some of the resources. I'll put some of the people I've seen that have helped me a lot. Like this one woman, she's amazing. And she does a whole bunch of different blends of things. But you still talk, but she's like pulling up things that you are not aware of. And maybe for you, Abby got to that way. I shut down when people like yell at me.
I can't do it. And I shouldn't say she was yelling, but I know what you mean though. Yeah,
but she's intense in that way. And that's intense. Where I would just like, I would go stoic and I couldn't access the deeper parts of myself.
She would like call me out. And that's why, just because there's different types of processing and stuff. For me, I needed the heady, like the cognitive understanding, because I felt like I was so close to making changes in my parenting and I would just continue to repeat patterns. And I was so frustrated by that. And it was like the feeling when you're in calculus and you just don't understand quite what is, and you're like, I know I'm so close, but it just doesn't click yet. And I can't figure out why. Mm-hmm. And I needed someone to call out the pattern to me so that I could be like, oh my God, that is why I'm doing. And then when it would click like that, it would completely change everything. Not to say that I would like 100% stop doing the thing I was doing, but at least I really understood deeply, and then I could make the changes from there. So that was at least important for me. But anyway, I love that. I think that, you know, there's lots of different ways to figure out these patterns, and we'll link some things in the show.
Yeah, and just try different things, because no therapist I've ever seen has helped Mike, and vice versa. We have different things styles that help ourselves. And so that's just something people need to know. Don't just go to a therapist. It doesn't get better. And then you just abandon the whole idea.
Yes. Don't abandon the whole
idea. Try lots of different ways of doing things.
Exactly. Just like imagine, you know, you go to a massage therapist and you don't really like it. You don't just like never go get a massage again. You just find a different therapist.
Yeah.
Okay. So my third tip is, this is like a physiological help, but I really, 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 and I know that you formulated it, so thank you for doing that, is the needed stress support. So when things get hard and you're feeling a lot of stress, what happens in your body is you release cortisol from your adrenal glands, and a lot of other things are happening. You're kind of like running in this sympathetic nervous system. You're probably not sleeping as well. And even if your sleep is rock star, but you have a lot of high stress during the day, there are things that you can do and take. I mean, this whole episode has been about that, but I guess in terms of the supplement side of things, that stress support has had such a positive impact on my life. And I don't even feel like I'm the kind of person that feels herbs all that much, but I can tell when I take it. And it is more of a long-term thing. So mm-hmm. it takes about a week for me to be like, oh yeah, I'm like chilling. Like I should have like wigged out in that moment, in that moment, in that moment. Like that was really hard and that was crazy. And I was just like kind of calm and dealing with it and managing it. And I don't feel burnt out and I don't feel tapped out. Okay, at 6 months postpartum right now, I feel the best I think I have for any of my postpartums at 6 months.
That's awesome.
As a fourth baby.
Yeah, like, and you didn't sleep that much.
No, I didn't sleep that much. Like I was really having a hard time still at 6 months with my first and my third. Our second was a little bit better, but there was so many other life. We had just moved back to Idaho and we were like trading. We were moving houses like every couple of weeks. It was crazy. And she had a really big, bad 4 month sleep regression that lasted months. And so mm-hmm. I was really not sleeping them. And Sunny right now is waking up because she's getting teeth and stuff. But I feel though, like it's deeper than that. It's deeper than just like how much sleep I get. I can actually get like a very bad night's sleep now and I'm okay. Like I'm just okay.
Yeah. And how often do you take the needed stress support? Do you take it every day, twice a day? Like how
what
do you
I try to do is I try to take 2 in the morning and 2 with lunch. But most of the time what happens is I either take all 4 in the morning or I don't take it at all because mm-hmm. you don't want to take it too late in the afternoon. And that has been a habit that I'm slowly trying to shift and change is just being like more cognizant about my supplements in the middle of the day or, you know, and so I put them out on my island and but I think that is probably the best way to do it is 2 in the morning, 2 in the around lunchtime. So the needed stress support is a blend of adaptogenic herbs. Adaptogens are those that will help modulate your stress pattern. Like if you're too much in any direction, it kind of brings you back to the middle, brings you back to like that gray zone that we were talking about in the beginning is like it's not good to hang out in any extreme. Mm-hmm. And so it's got ashwagandha and rhodiola, schisandra, holy basil.
Shatavari.
Yeah, shatavari. Like oat straw, maybe. I forget. Mm-hmm. It's basically all of the heavy hitters that we know of in one yeah. supplement.
And safe for breastfeeding, which is yes, great.
And safe for breastfeeding. So the second that your baby comes out of you, you can take it. You don't want to take it while you're pregnant, but you can start taking it. And it's just, it's helped so much. It's helped so much. And even just like individually as herbs, like let's just take ashwagandha for instance. For sleep specifically, it's an herbal blend that will help you with your energy modulation during the day and your stress response, but it also helps you have deeper, better sleep at night. It's mm-hmm. it's amazing, but you don't want to take it at night. It's just, it's something that through the cortisol patterns and the way that they change throughout the day, you will have that like, you know, better, deeper, more supported sleep in that kind of a way. And I have just really been trying to like sound the alarm on how helpful it has been because I think it's a pretty easy supplement to take. It's like, you know, 2 twice a day or just all 4 at once. Okay, fine. Just like make it easier on yourself. Get it in at some point. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be every day. It's not like you're going to mess with your system if you don't take it every day. It is better. It's like a long, you know, herbs are like that. Herbs have a compounding effect most of the time. And so I just wanted to mention that because I think that sometimes when people are like, really drowning, it can at least help them get that like 10% back up of their face above water so that they can then make some of these other changes we've been talking about, like where they can prioritize joy, they can talk with their partner, they can blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. But when it's really, really hard and you just need something external to be helping you, that has been a huge piece for me.
I love that. That's such a good tip. I just want to interject here and give a shout out to our amazing sponsor, Needed. Dr. Morgan just talked about how much their stress support has been a pivotal player in supporting her through challenging times during postpartum and motherhood. I am honored to have played a major role in formulating this product, and I can tell you it is worth trying for yourself. We don't recommend this product during pregnancy, but it is amazing to start taking the moment your baby is born and throughout the seasons of motherhood. Consider giving yourself at least 3 months to notice the full effects. Check it out at thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER. Okay, back to the show. I'll share my third and last tip quickly, which is for me, asking for help in times when things get hard, which again is another one of those cliches that everyone could be like, yeah, I know, but do you really ask for help? And I think it's hard for a lot of people to ask for help. I think it's hard for multiple reasons. One is it's hard for us to accept help sometimes. For others, it's hard because they don't know where help could come from. You know, if you don't have family that lives nearby or friends or whatever. And so if you find it hard to ask for help, that's a place where you go to your trauma release, emotional release person, because typically anytime something is hard that's coming from us, there's something deeper that we need to look at. If something's hard, like, wow, I just got hit in a car accident, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you need to go process your trauma. I mean, process like the trauma of being hit in the car accident. But if you're like, I can't ask for help, or I feel guilty asking for help, or, you know, I should be able to do it on my own, or I don't work, my husband works, so I can't ask him for help. Anything that comes from you like that, you is an alarm, a big red alarm. You need to go work on that. And it's very hard to do by yourself. So get help. I'll link in the show notes. I don't know if I had just done so much work so I can get to a place where I can ask for that, but I really feel that that is a skill. And not feeling guilty, finding ways where you can find support. Like, for example, in my postpartum period, my husband and I were both working from home, trying to manage the baby, trying to take calls and meetings in between her naps. And it got so bad. I remember this as well, sitting on the couch being like, we're both drowning. We're dying. This is so hard. We have to do something. And I really sat with myself and said, okay, if there's any type of help that I could imagine, what would it be? Like, I really did this like manifestation daydreaming. And I'm like, the hardest thing for me, just like you with joy, the thing that is the best for me to fill my cup is to have help with food. I just need to be well fed. Like, that's my thing. I need that. It's the most important thing. And so when we set out to hire a nanny, like, we didn't put our child in daycare. And we didn't just hire a nanny. I put on an ad to have someone who could come help me cook, and just happened to be someone who could like watch the baby once in a while if we needed that. And the woman that we hired was amazing. And I'm not saying that everyone can find someone as amazing as her, but I taught her a lot of things around cooking. If anyone buys my like food course, the Nourish Your Body course, I have completely planned out meals for an entire month, with shopping lists, recipes, exactly how to do everything. You could hand that to a person who's never even learned how to cook, and they could learn. It's not impossible to find somebody, or doing food delivery services, or getting on a group with friends where you say, hey, once a week, you know, on Tuesdays, maybe Morgan makes a big pot of chili and shares it with me. And on the next Tuesday, I make something and share it with her, or something where you're getting help. Like, for example, me being so sick in pregnancy, I know that I do better with food from other people for some reason, you know? And so I've reached out to people, and people offer, a lot of times when you're struggling, people will offer, let me know if I can bring something by, and people will be like, okay, but like they never actually take them up on their offer. Just do it. And, you know, I am lucky where I have friends and family who are willing to help, but that's important. Asking your partner to step up, and even if they work and do other things, like right now in our hard journey, we are really lucky in that my husband doesn't leave the house for like 10 hours a day. I understand if that's the case, that's hard, but that's where you bring in other help. But getting support with laundry, or, you know, having someone help do the dishes, there's just no shame in asking for help. We aren't meant to live in these homes where it's just two people working full-time, raising children, having to do all the things. This is why we're burned out and why times seem even harder. And, you know, in moments like when your pregnancy is hard, or in infertility, you know, whatever it is that's helpful for you, I think being able to reach out and ask for help is a skill, and it's important. And if there is guilt that shows up, like I said, working on that, or just returning the favor, you know, and it doesn't have to be in that season. Just like you and I, we've done things where when you're in an intense time, you know, I'll bring you something. And then I know once I have a postpartum, you'll bring me something. You know, it doesn't have to be like reciprocated right there in that season if it's hard. And so whatever that looks like, I just think being able to ask for help and knowing that a lot of people actually genuinely want to help you, most people just don't ever actually take people up on that offer.
And like one thing too is that people are usually honored. I think we've talked about this on another podcast before, but people are usually honored to be asked for help, and they are more than willing to do it. And it's not like they're going, oh my God, you know that when people have that kind of an attitude is when there are like passive aggressive dynamics that begin, maybe because there is resentment going on in the relationship or frustration because something else. But mm-hmm. usually if it's like, hey, I'm
really struggling.
Yeah. Like I really need help. Can we plan a time next week? And it's like, you know, obviously giving the person flexibility. Don't say like 8 a.m. on Wednesday morning, I need you to bring me this. It's like,
yeah.
Sometime next week, can you please make me a meal? Like I'm so sick of my food. Like I need help or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if a friend is coming to visit you and they especially when they offer and they're like, do you need anything from town? Like I'm coming, you know, because both mm-hmm. of us kind of live far away from downtown Boise. And it's like, oh, actually, yeah. Can you run by one particular store and grab me this thing or whatever it is? So anyway, people are usually more than willing to help. They love that feeling of being helpful. It is again, ding, 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 another human truth about our beings is that we get filled up by being a contributor and having meaning and purpose and feeling like we did something that was big and important for someone else. It really does fill us up. So we need to just remember all of these different types of things. And I think that this has been a really great collective resource of ideas for people who are struggling when things get hard. It's like, listen, we are there. Somebody asked actually, how do you guys manage like being doctors and mothers and doing all the different stuff? And I feel like something that we really need to just get clear is that like neither of us are like thriving. We're doing the best we can.
Yeah. Or like for me, like I am not doing all of this by myself. Like my husband helps with laundry. He helps cook. Yeah, he helps do the dishes. If I see some of these people and my heart just breaks for them, like the mothers who are working, taking care of their children, doing all the cooking, all the cleaning, all the dishes, all the laundry, of course you feel like you're dying because you are dying because you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
And if your husband can't or he doesn't know how or there's no time, then getting more help, like whatever that is, if your husband works outside of the home and makes enough money, this is the time. Like you're not going to be saving for college right now. You're in a really bad, dark place. Like hire someone to come help you. This is the time. Like your health and your mental health and the state of your family, in my experience, my opinion, is worth it. If this, you know, we weren't saving during the time that we had Heidi. But I look back and I don't regret it at all because she allowed me to have joy in my postpartum period with my daughter. And looking back, if I hadn't had her help, I honestly think I would have died. I couldn't have done it. I couldn't have worked and done all that. It's crazy.
Well, I think that like what you said about it being – it's a season. It doesn't – I think at least me, I don't know if this is common or not, but I tend to think about these sorts of decisions as being like as if it's forever. And it's like, no, even if it's just a couple of months or something. Like right now, my husband and I are kind of in this battle where I want to use the grocery delivery services more.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. He thinks it's like very bougie. And I'm kind of like, babe.
Yeah. This is the season.
Right now, like the 2 hours that it takes, hour of driving each direction, and then, you know, let's just pretend that we're there for 45 minutes or an hour, of going and doing like the Costco haul or whatever. Right now, especially, it's spring and on our land, there's so much to be doing. And I'm trying to get all this different work stuff done and my CEUs for my license. And we have a 6-month-old that's not sleeping and da da da, like whatever. This is an okay time to lean into doing grocery delivery. It does not mean that we are never going to go to the grocery store again in person.
Exactly.
Like, you know, and I know that some people do that all the time. They haven't stepped foot in a grocery store themselves in a long time. And we always go in the store. We take all of our kids with us. It's like something we've just always done. People think we're insane. And I'm like, I've kind of just been like, you know what? It's okay. It's okay to have the groceries delivered. It's such a silly thing. Like, or I remember one of my friends who's really good at asking for what she needs. And in the time that she was doing this, I was triggered by this because to me it felt like maybe, I don't know what, it tapped into some guilt thing or something of me. But now I'm like, more power to you. Good job. She hired somebody to come, some like, I don't know, high school girl to come and fold her laundry twice a week.
Yeah.
And I was in my mind, I was like, you can't just like fold your laundry. Come on. But now I'm like, heck yeah, do it.
No, we just have to get over those. Again, if you're like, this is bougie, this is like whatever. Yeah. High schoolers. Like I could look in my neighborhood right now, which we had the season of Heidi where she was almost like full-time help and amazing. We don't have any help right now, but we're in a different season. And, you know, my husband is pulling the majority of the weight. And I appreciate him for that so much. And there's going to be a season, probably postpartum, that we're going to need more help again. But it doesn't even have to be expensive. Like, I haven't asked, but there's a ton of high schoolers in our neighborhood. Like, I guarantee one of them would, like, love to come, you know, help me fold laundry or, you know, watch AV while I did whatever. Like, we just need a pull in our community. And sometimes it's not – I don't have family that lives nearby. I hear that all the time. It's like, it doesn't have to just come from family. In fact, sometimes it shouldn't, because we don't necessarily need to make our family like our slaves, you know? Yeah. It's like, sometimes we just have to pull in different unique and creative experiences. And when we hired Heidi, everyone's like, oh my God, how did you find someone who cooked? I was like, I put that in the job description. It wasn't just like a random happenstance that she like wanted to help us with food. I just don't think people even think about that. They're like, oh, well, I can only hire a nanny. It's like, no, I hired someone who's like passionate about wanting to like make food for me. Anyone can watch a kid, in my experience. It's like, to me, having someone who's willing and wants to like help with food is invaluable.
Yeah. Well, and then she helped you do, like, I'm kind of training our nanny to do that right now. She's younger, but I've been like, okay, look, the money aspect of this, when I think about how we are not paying for any kind of like a daycare, preschool, to pay her more for the hours when she is watching all four kids. So we've added on the baby now, like she watches the baby when she does come over. And I told her, I write her out a list. She's doing homeschool with my kids when she comes over. She is, you know, she always makes them lunch, but then I also am adding on for her to clean up like our entire kitchen and toy area, which is a total freaking mess all the time. And then I'm slowly, as she's getting more and more used to the baby, going to add in dinner prep. I'm going to be like, cut up these vegetables, do these things, but I'm paying her very well.
Yeah.
And it's like still worth it to me though, because when at the end of those days when I've done work, I come out into my house and there's,
it's amazing. My kids
are
well fed
with a healthy meal. My kitchen's clean. My living room's clean. All my kids are happy. They have done their school and there's dinner that's like pretty much ready. I mean, it's amazing. And it does, it's a shift in your expenses. So sometimes, you know, you might have a $15 subscription to something that you're not even really using, or you don't even know you had a doubled up subscription to like Audible or whatever it is. And it's like, maybe for right now, or like some kind of a streaming service or something, or you can call your cell phones, we just did this recently. I have no idea why our cell phone bill was so high that it, as it was, but it was. And we called and we got it adjusted. And my experience of my cell phone abilities is the exact same, but I'm paying like $70 less a month.
Yeah.
And I would so much rather pay my cute little neighbor girl those $70 if I was going to, you know what I mean? Like to shift around, because I think some people are going to be like, oh, well, I'm privileged and blah, blah, blah. And yes, of course. But there's usually places where you can scrape it up. And you and I are doing that too. It's not like we're super loaded or something like that. Like we're always trying to think about like, how can I shift this for, again, this season? It is not necessarily forever. So anyway, okay. I know that we got to go. This episode's been absolutely jam-packed. I hope you guys all enjoy it. Welcome to season 5. We are really excited. And we have a million billion interviews this season. It's really cool and exciting. So interviews. Anyway, have a great rest of your week, and hopefully these will be helpful for you to lean on when times get hard.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.